And a good Wednesday evening to you. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios. Joining me tonight is the host of Slapshot Radio, Paul McCann. You can usually hear him Wednesdays at 7. Tonight, we have Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Braden Gall, Hal Gill, Cody McLeod, Kyle Turris out at Tin Roof on Broadway. So you'll be able to hear Paul and company Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on 102.5 The Game. Paul.
Yes.
How we doing?
How can you not be doing well? It was a fabulous night at Bridgestone Arena last night.
Yes, it was.
And you know what? Before we get it started, Ryan, I know you want to go here, and so do I.
Yes. So before we get into an incredible game from UC Saros, and before we get into an incredibly controversial hit by William Carrier on Ryan Johansson, I want to give a shout-out to the fans last night.
Oh, yeah.
Last night was an incredible turnout, given the weather, given the roads. We have seen games in the past where the weather's been a little dicey, there's been ice on the roads, what have you. Games in the past like that, on nights like last night where, you know, it was frigid outside with the roads a little dicey, we would have seen 10,000 to 12,000 people in the stands. Last night, it almost felt like a playoff game.
Little hockey amongst a few close friends, especially with a team that isn't a draw. I mean, let's face it, people are talking about hockey. People are talking about Vegas. But, you know, when you look at it and go, okay, it's a brand-new hockey team. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, last night that place was absolutely rocking. And, you know, I was looking around. It was funny because – we were talking about it in our pregame, you know, in our game ops meeting and stuff like that, going, we don't know what the crowd's going to look like. Mm-hmm. So we kind of prepped for if there was only that 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, and we prepped to see if it was going to be like it was. And I'll tell you what, brought it hard. Smashville doesn't care. Snow, ice, we're there.
Well, I think they responded to the play on the ice because the play on the ice felt like a playoff game. It got chippy.
Oh, yeah.
It was intense. It was some good back and forth action with good chances on both ends.
Yep.
And, you know, UC Saros last night came up absolutely monstrous.
No
question. 43 save shutout.
Saros was the difference, but I have to give this because Saros had 43 saves. The high danger chances were limited. There was a few, and he was big on those.
Especially on the penalty kill.
No
question.
On the
penalty kill, UC Saros was dialed in.
He was dialed in the entire game,
right.
No question. But I want to expand the credit a little bit because I think defensively was one of the more solid games you saw out of the Nashville Predators last night. I mean, the sticks were more active than you've seen in a long time last night. I wrote in my blog on Hockey Buzz this morning that I think they solved the Vegas riddle. And I've said this over and over again, and look, I know it's hip to be, you know, skeptical of Vegas and all that stuff. I give them credit. That is a hard-working hockey team that does not quit skating. Gerard Gallant is really building a wonderful culture there.
Gerard Gallant is going to win the Jack Adams this year.
I think he should because he pulled a team of we don't want yous together, got them all pulling on the rope the same way. But here's what I've thought previously, and I think last night, while only one data point, I use that as my weasel word for this in case it comes flying back at me in about a month. I don't think Vegas has another gear. And, you know, we were talking about that in the media room last night a little bit. Does Vegas have another gear? Because I think they've been playing playoff hockey since October.
They have been.
So, you know, the interesting piece is they've had to play playoff hockey to be where they're at. Well, you know what? Teams wake up right now. And the comparison that someone I was sitting at the table with drew, and I think it's a really apt comparison, is the Nashville Predators coming into their first playoff. When they came into that playoff and they had to play playoff hockey for 3 or 4 months just to make it, when Detroit was sitting there going, oh, is it playoff time? And they stepped it up a little bit for, you know, for the Predators just to get through us. And then they really started playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went on to win the Cup that year. And when you look at that, I think Vegas is a little bit of that. And last night reminded me of it. Because, Ryan, Vegas, I think Nashville out-Vegased Vegas last night. They kind of rope-a-doped them. You know, they matched their speed. They matched their active sticks. They matched everything that Vegas did to them 2 weeks earlier. And you saw the frustration level of that Vegas team grow with each passing minute. And by the third period, they started losing some of their discipline.
Mm-hmm.
They were not looking for the good shots like they normally were. They were throwing a lot from the outside. And I just, you know, usually you're up 1-0, man. You're nervous as all get out in that last 3-4 minutes. For some reason, I wasn't. For some reason, I knew they weren't going to win that game last night. And I just didn't have that, oh, geez, here it comes.
Well, I did feel a little differently because they did do that in December.
Sure they've
been doing it all year.
Absolutely.
Down one goal late in the game, and they find a way to win.
Just didn't feel it last
night. In overtime.
Okay. Just didn't feel it last night. And I truly believe, look, Vegas is going to make the playoffs. They're going to go out in the first round, and it'll be a great success for them. That's wonderful. But I don't think they're going to be a factor going forward. First time they've lost two in a row since November.
Mm-hmm.
They've got an interesting schedule coming up. It's going to be fascinating to watch because the other teams are starting to lift up their play now. Let's see if they can match it. No, I don't think they can.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth joined by Slapshot Radio's Paul McCann in studio tonight, leading you up to Smashville Live at 7 o'clock live from Tin Roof on Broadway. Before we get back into UC Saros, I do want to say you mentioned how the Preds have solved the Vegas riddle. The 1-0 win last night was the Preds' first win against Vegas in three meetings this regular season. One thing that I think head coach Peter Laviolette has done a really good job of all year is putting the lineup together based on matchups and based on what needs to happen to win the game that night.
Yep.
I thought it was interesting last night that the core four weren't together as they had been in the previous four games with Ryan Ellis coming back from injury. And you had at least one of those players on the ice at all times last night. And I wonder if Lavi thought that is the best way to solve that Vegas riddle.
Maybe.
With all the depth that the Golden Knights have,
yep,
is to make sure that one of, if not two of, PK Subban, Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, and Matias Ekholm were on the ice at all times last night.
It was a fascinating decision. I think I've always known that Peter Laviolette is a very, very good coach. Laviolette made the leap in my mind last night to brilliant. That's one of the reasons right there, because I really feel like that was a conscious effort to make sure that there was no gimmies for Vegas last night. I liked that, and I'm sorry, just the decision on playing UC Saros last night.
Totally agree.
Absolutely brilliant. And the funny thing about it is everyone before the game's going, why are they playing Saros? They had a week off. Put Rene in there. I don't get – it was – perfect.
It was brilliant. Like you said, that word is perfect. It was brilliant because UC Saros during the bye week got some playing time in Milwaukee. He was fresh. He's playing well. Pecorine could have been a little rusty. UC Saros goes in there last night, pitches a 43-save shutout. Whew. And I would agree with you. A lot of the even strength chances were from a distance.
Yeah.
But he made some clutch saves, especially when that game was still scoreless.
Not taking anything away from Saros last night. Saros was outstanding. And I think this is you're watching the maturation. You're watching the development, and you're kind of – you're going to be able to say 15 years from now, you watched UC Saros develop. You watched – him in front of your eyes as a season ticket holder, as a fan watching on TV. You watched him mature and develop before your eyes. He is already a very good goaltender. I don't know what his ceiling is, but I'll tell you what, it's higher than where he is right now.
Well, I will go ahead and say this. I was wrong about UC Saros. Back in late October or November, I had doubts about him.
Were you a Mazanets guy?
Well, no. No, I'm not talking about last season. No respect to Matt or disrespect to Matt.
Absolutely.
But I was not really a believer ever in Marek Mazanets. But earlier this season on this show, I expressed concerns over UC Saros, and they kind of filtered in from last season because the back half of his season last year wasn't as good as the first half, and you thought maybe the NHL is starting to figure him out. got off to a little bit of a slow start in October this year, and you're thinking, is he really the future as they call him?
Right.
In the last nine games, UC Saros is 5-0-3 with a .956 save percentage and 1.53 goals against average. He's proved me wrong over these last nine games.
But here's the thing, and because Saros is a kind of counter to what the trend is in the National Hockey League right now. The trend is Pekarinen, Anders Lindbox, those 6 foot, 6 foot two, 6 foot five, 6 foot eight, whatever you can get in there. And Saros is not.
He's Darren Pang.
You know, he is. But again, the interesting piece was it was bigger, better, and stronger up until the last few years, and now it's speed, speed, speed. It's going to go back around again. A good goaltender is a good goaltender is a good goaltender. And as long as he's not shorter than 4 foot tall, I think he'll be all right.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, there's another incident from last night's game that we need to get into. Ryan Johansson was hit by William Carrier of the Vegas Golden Knights late in the second period. How did former NHL referee Carey Fraser see that call? He will join us next. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Paul McCann. You're listening to Preds Insiders on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Some Foo Fighters bringing us back here.
Yeah.
Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul, you know my love for Foo Fighters, and I know your love for Foo Fighters, and so this was perfect.
But you know what? And my wife insists on it as part of Slapshot Radio. And besides, you know, we've had to wait six extra months for the Foos. I mean, the tickets are sitting there with October as a date on them. And now we got to wait until May
4th.
But that's okay. I can wait. I can wait.
Absolutely. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Paul McCann from Slapshot Radio as we discuss Nashville's 1-0 win over the Vegas Golden Knights last night. A big win for the Preds. But they did lose Ryan Johansson late in the second period last night. A lot of fans up in arms over the hit that William Carrier of Vegas laid on Johansson. And joining us now to discuss this play is former NHL referee Carey Fraser. Carey, thanks for joining us tonight.
Always a pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
So, Carey, let's kind of go through the play. Ryan Johansson is sitting right in front of Paul McCann at the penalty boxes, and he's kind of tangled up with James Neal. He gets the puck. Just as he passes the puck, William Carrier lays a hit on him, and Johansson, it looked bad. I mean, Johansson's head hit the glass. His arms kind of froze a little bit. It was obvious that he got his bell rung a little bit. What was your view of that play that did not result in a penalty or supplemental discipline today from the Department of Player Safety?
Well, the key point in the check is that Ryan Johansson's body posture and his head, the top of his head, is even lower than Paul McCann sitting in the penalty box, so we know how tall he is.
Hey, watch it.
sorry about that. No sore jokes here. But in truth, if you look, and I just sent Paul some screen grabs. If you look at what Carrier in his approach, it is a textbook classic approach to deliver a legal body check. He has dropped his posture below that of Ryan Johansson. His legs are bent. He is actually, his head, the helmet of Carrier is below the helmet, and his shoulder is below the chin of Johansson in the immediate setup and approach of a legal body check. So the resulting dropped posture of Johansson has resulted in the chin contact, which is secondary to a full body check delivered with the shoulder attempted through the chest of an opponent.
So, I completely agree with a lot of what you're saying. A lot of Preds fans on Twitter, on social media, in the crowd last night, thought the principal point of contact was the head. And we hear that all the time from the league, that they're trying to get rid of hits like that we saw from Carrier on Johansson last night. So where's the consistency, I think, is my question.
Good question.
In terms of, you know, doling out suspensions, because there's not too much difference between the hit that Carrier put on Johansson last night compared to the one that Andrew Cogliano put on the Kings player the other night that resulted in a two-game suspension.
No, I would disagree with that statement totally, in the sense that the Cogliano hit was delivered well beyond an acceptable period of time with when the puck had been dished off. There was a full second in the delay of the puck being released to the point time of impact, and it was on an unsuspecting player. Brian Johansson, still, the puck is well within camera frame of being just released as Terrier is approaching with his knees bent, lowered posture, ready to deliver a shoulder check. There is a point in the rule also that says if a player lowers his posture just prior to contact, we can't take hitting out of body checking out of the game. I hate that word hit because it sounds harsh.
Yeah.
It's nasty. This was not a nasty hit body check. This was simply an attempt to finish a check on a player that had immediately prior to released the puck and is eligible to be body checked. Cogliano, in his case, his opponent was not eligible to be body checked based on the time lapse between release of puck, a couple of strides taken place, and then, boom, the player turns and there's a shoulder to the head. He was upright, too, in the previous check that you described, or nasty hit.
Yeah, Kerry, I absolutely see where you're coming from, and I think there's in some respects, I mean, there's a little bit of gold-colored glasses going on right now because, honestly, I couldn't see it from my vantage point. I just I kind of saw the hit initiate, but I didn't see where the puck was, and I certainly didn't see how Ryan Ellis fell to the ice. And I think that was probably – I think you're seeing a lot more upset about the result – of the hit.
You mean Ryan Johansson.
Excuse me, Ryan Johansson. You're right. But I think you're seeing a lot more upset about the result of the hit versus the hit itself. And, you know, again, you try and line a hit up like that, you're not trying to hit somebody right square on the chin. And he caught him right on the button. It was one of those kind of bang-bang plays that I don't think Carrier could have avoided.
No, you're absolutely right, and that was my next point of statement, that there was no option. The way that Carrier came in, appropriately set up to deliver and dropped his body posture to make a legal body check, that at the point of contact, in his effort to put his shoulder through and into the chest of his opponent, Johansson, there was nothing he could do to pull out of it. And even at contact, the puck is still in camera frame. It's all within a reasonable time to finish a body check.
Yeah.
If we go back to November 1st and Ryan Johansson's body check with Pierre Edward Vlasic,
yep.
Do you recall that play where in that play, Ryan Johansson did exactly what he would be taught. It would be, and I hate this term too, but I'm going to use it, a hockey play, where he attempted to seal off the lane of his opponent in the front side, which is the perfect approach. You want to seal the player as Vlasic was in the corner. But on that play, Vlasic dropped his head down low again to almost the top of the dasher board to make a play with the puck.
Mm-hmm.
So when Johansson approached him, based on that body posture, that lowered last second body posture drop by Vlasic, there was going to be some contact to the head. And Johansson approached appropriately with a hockey play to seal off the lane and get the puck. It was about puck possession, which he did. He got it with his feet after the body contact. There was no discipline on that either, nor should there have been, in spite of the fact that Vlasic didn't finish the game, had a head issue similar to this. I hate to see players, any player, regardless of skill level, regardless of superstardom, such as Ryan Johansson demonstrates, I hate to see contact to the head in all cases. But I think in this particular one, if we were to eliminate any contact to the head, we'd be pulling an element out of the game that is completely legal within the parameters of the physicality of the game of hockey.
He is Carey Fraser. I tell you what, we love having him on Slapshot Radio all the time. Glad you could join us tonight. Carey, before we let you go, I do want to ask, how's things going? How's your health? It was a real compelling story that came out during Hockey Fights Cancer Night, and just want to know how you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for asking. I was placed on a chemo pill called hydroxyurea to reduce my platelet count, and every 2 weeks I get a blood test. Well, mm-hmm. I was going up in platelet count, moving towards 1 million, which is a scary number, when 350 is the sort of the maximum range that you want your platelets.
Right.
After the first 2 weeks, dropped down by 80,000. I'm now down to 460. The hematologist wants me just under 300, making sure that the white cells and everything else and the anemia are fine. The only side effect that I'm feeling, guys, I think, is quite a bit of fatigue. But I'm pushing through it with exercise and hockey mentality, never give up sort of thing. But thanks for asking. It's really good. I encourage everybody to, especially over the age of 50, get a blood test regularly every 6 months to a year, and make sure that platelet count is in line with all of the other things, because what can result is blood clots, heart attack, stroke, and take the big one.
Former NHL referee Carey Fraser has been our guest here on Preds Insiders. Carey, we're thinking about you. Hope you're feeling well, and we appreciate you joining us tonight here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Anytime, guys, and it was a big win for the Preds against a great team in the Golden Knights, but certainly another big loss in terms of manpower.
Absolutely. Carey Fraser, thanks again for joining us tonight.
Cheers, guys.
Interesting thoughts from Carey Fraser, and we are out of time in the segment, but I want to bring this back in the next segment, our reaction to what Carey Fraser had to say about William Carrier's hit on Ryan Johansson last night in the Preds 1-0 win over Vegas. Plus, we will hear audio from Hal Gill and his perspective. He had a lot of interesting things to say about that hit in postgame last night. We'll hear a little bit of that as well on the other side. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Paul McCann. This is Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios alongside Slapshot Radio's Paul McCann. We're taking you up until 7 o'clock for Smashville Live with Braden Gall, Hal Gill, Cody McLeod, and Kyle Turris down at Tin Roof on Broadway. If you're driving around looking for something to do tonight, head on down to Tin Roof on Broadway. There is free parking in the Demumbrian entrance of the Bridgestone Arena Garage. And you can go out to Tin Roof on Broadway and have a great time.
And then you walk very quickly.
Yes.
Very quickly to the Tin Roof.
Yes. You
speed
walk.
At 19 degrees, your butt's
walking.
Moving.
Yeah. And then you speed walk from Tin Roof back to your car so that you can hear Penalty Box Radio at 8 o'clock tonight with Justin Bradford and company.
Three full hours. Good heavens.
Three full hours of
hockey talk.
Of hockey talk here on this Wednesday night in January. Big, big Preds win last night, 1-0. Over the Vegas Golden Knights. So Carey Fraser, former NHL referee, came on last segment. We asked him about the Ryan Johansson hit that he took from William Carrier of the Vegas Golden Knights. And, Paul, we were sitting here talking during the break, and this hit that Carrier put on Johansson is truly borderline of being worthy of supplemental discipline.
I think it was worthy of a penalty. I don't and here's why I say it. Look, we want hitting in this game. The physical part of hockey is an important part of this game. Or to use Carey Fraser, we want body checking in this game.
That's one of the best parts of last night's game because it felt like the playoffs.
Absolutely.
When it feels like the playoffs, though, it's more rugged and you're more prone to incidents like this that happened last night.
Correct. And when you see when I saw it, and I'm listening to post game on the way home, I hadn't seen the hit yet, So I'm sitting here going, you know, I'm hearing, you know, Hal Gill talk about it on post game. I'm hearing all this stuff going on. I'm like, oh gosh, this has got to be awful. And I, sure enough, the first time I mean, immediately go home, get the DVR, go right to the hit. And I'm sitting there going, I'm watching, you know, Johansson fall like a rag doll. And I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh, that's awful. This is ridiculous. And then I looked at it a second time. And I looked at it a third time. And the third time, I noticed where the puck was. Puck wasn't more than, you know, 2 foot away from him at the initiation of the hit.
The time between Johansson releasing the puck and getting hit by Carrier was 0.2 seconds. I timed it like 10 times today, rewatching the hit over and over again. And it was consistently in the ballpark of 0.2.
This is one of those ones that you look at and say, you wish weren't there. But it's also an extreme overreaction if you legislate that one out. And you said something, you know, in between that I think is really cogent right now. It's that, where's the consistency?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at a rule book that, you know, in a 6-point type, that is, you know, that is still an inch and a half thick.
Has thousands of different articles and... Look, that is my entire point of this incident last night, is mm-hmm. there's inconsistency. The NHL says they want to get out hits to the head. This was a hit to the head where the principal point of contact was Carrier's shoulder to Johansson's jaw / chin / cheek, however you want to put it.
Right.
And if they're wanting to get rid of these hits.
I'm not defending the hit, but I will say, when you look at, you know, and Frazier had a good point when he's talking about Johansson's body posture,
mm-hmm.
and you see him going forward, basically finishing the pass. You see his head going forward. You see him, you know, his head definitely was down. You look at that, and at that point, that is a line him up, and you know, that's one of those things you look at. That's. You know, that's Scott Stevens on Paul Kariya. That's Peter Forsberg on almost any player he played against. It's, I mean, so I get it. I don't like the result of it, but I don't think I want to overreact and legislate that hit out of the game, because 999 times out of 1,000, that's not right on the button, and it's not right. You know, it's not something that knocks somebody out. It's just a good solid hit.
Now, the good news for the Preds is that Ryan Johansson did practice today.
Whew. Amen.
At Bridgestone Arena.
Yes.
And we'll get into a full practice update next segment. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul, you mentioned Hal Gill and his comments last night on the postgame show. And he and Darren McFarland went on for about 5 minutes on this play.
Yep.
And I heard it live as well. And I texted our producers back here at the station, Ian Safar, and I said, please save this entire clip because I want to use it tomorrow night on the show. Here is part of what Hal Gill had to say last night on the hit by William Carrier on Ryan Johansson.
In the heat of a game, he's going to hit hard. If he doesn't go back, I mean, this is a guy who needs to do that to be effective. So he's going to finish his check. Everyone on the ice knows that. So he finishes his check, gets him right on the button. His head goes back. Hits the glass. He's obviously stunned right away. Hopefully he's okay, but I just don't know where that lies. And it's an interesting call because it was a hit to the head. If they're going to look at it, the NHL player safety is going to look at it. I think they're going to say that he hit him right on the kisser. I mean, that was a headshot. I just don't know how you hit someone if you can't hit their head. When their head's down, you're trying to go right through their chest and you hit their head, it's tough. I mean, does he have to pull up? Does he not finish his check there? There's a lot of questions for me.
Hal Gill last night on the postgame show talking about William Carrier's hit on Ryan Johansson.
How do you legislate it out? You don't. And, I mean, you knock wood and you hope. I personally think, you know, it's funny because during this entire conversation, all I keep thinking is that scene from Mystery Alaska when Tree knocks out the little kid. Head was down. Head was down. I mean, you have to have your head on a swivel, you know, and understand that when you're doing that, sometimes you're going to get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was unfortunate, But once the light of day hit and I kind of looked at it again and thought about it a little bit, I can't sit here and say, throw the book at Carrier. Again, the inconsistency is the thing that bothers everybody. Mm-hmm. It's been bothering us in the playoffs in the NFL playoffs right now.
That's my exact point. Yep. Not only the NHL, but any sport right now, it feels like the rule book is over convoluted with language. And as a result, you get inconsistency with officiating.
And again, I think, you know, we just said this. It's like, you know what? Why don't we just throw it all out? Let's just throw the entire rule book out. Let's have, you know, or at least put a rule committee that says you get 12 rules. Mm-hmm. You know? All right, you know what? Why? Give them 10. God only needed 10. You know, you get 10 rules, you know? And that's all you get. Only 10. And see which ones you come up with, and then let's play some hockey.
Well, and the explanation that head coach Pierre Laviolette got last night on the bench at the end of the second period when this play occurred was that it was a clean hit, and then we don't see any hearing today for William Carrier. So at least there was consistency there from the NHL where the officials and the Department of Player Safety both agreed that it was not egregious of a hit to suspend him.
Sorry to interrupt, but I will say – I would have probably feel much better about this entire thing. To your point, you want to get this out of the head? Was there head contact? There was head contact. Guess what? In that inch and a half thick rule book of 6-point type, there's a rule in there that says there's a 2-minute penalty for head contact. I'd have felt a lot better if they had called that.
100%.
Then I think a lot of this goes away. And even if, you know what? You get called for high sticking, even if, you know, it's accidental. You're responsible for your own stick. You are responsible for your own body as well. And I think there should have been, again, a 2-minute head contact penalty. Look, did it equal losing Ryan Johansson for half a game? No. But at least it's called, and at least a message gets sent. I think that might be the compromise here that didn't happen.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, we will update you on what happened today at practice. Ryan Johansson, did he practice or did he not? We'll get into that next. Plus, why UC Saros' improvement could be the best thing to happen to the Preds this season. We'll get into all of that next. You're listening to Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Paul McCann on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, Pete, you're also listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Slapshot Radio's Paul McCann, the PA voice that you hear at Bridgestone Arena for all Preds home games. And the Preds are back at home tomorrow night against the Arizona Coyotes. Pregame at 6. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game.
As I call it, the revenge series.
Yes, the Coyotes beating the Preds. What was it?
Two in overtime in that game? It was 2 weeks ago. Same thing with Vegas. Yep. This is the revenge
there
week
we
right
go.
Now.
So we could see Pecorine back in there tomorrow night. He has absolutely dominated the Coyotes throughout his career. But before we get to that game tomorrow night against the Arizona Coyotes, coming up at 7 o'clock, it is Smashville Live at Tin Roof on Broadway. Brayden Gall and Hal Gill will be joined by Preds player guests Cody McLeod and Kyle Turris. Right. So that should be a lot of fun coming up here at 7 o'clock. That will be followed by Penalty Box Radio at 8 o'clock. Why UC Saros' improvement could be the best thing to happen to the Preds this season, that's coming up here in a couple minutes. But practice update today for the Nashville Predators. Paul, Ryan Johansson did skate today. Nice. Great sign after taking that hit last night that we've been talking about for
Absolutely.
Most of the show. Great sign that Ryan Johansson was on the ice.
No, he practiced. He didn't just skate, right?
Yes, he practiced.
Yeah.
And he was joined on a line by Kevin Fiala and Callie Yarncroak. The second line was Scott Hartnell, Kyle Turris, and Craig Smith. So a little bit of juggling today from Pierre Laviolette.
Interesting. I like that. You're going to have to shake it up a little bit right now. I mean, the fist line is still creating chances but not really finishing.
Kyle Turris, 2 points in the last 11 games.
You know, you looked at, you know, that was Fiala's first goal in his last first point in his last 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but again, it's not that they haven't been dangerous. It's just a matter of they haven't been converting on their chances. Now, I think it's some of it's their PDO kind of coming back to the mean? I mean, because they were hotter than a $2 pistol for a while. So it's going to come back a little bit. But again, you shake up the lines a little bit and then, you know, give that a couple of weeks. You put them all back together. When the Jofa line is back together, you put the fist line back together and watch out.
Now, Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson did skate this morning before practice.
Okay.
I think it's a positive after the report Monday afternoon about Victor Arvidsson at practice that he did participate in morning skate yesterday. He is on injured reserve, eligible to return tomorrow night. It's a positive that the two of them are skating,
yes,
and that especially Arvidsson, after what looked like could be a little bit more serious than what it turned out to be. You know.
Well, we'll see as far as that goes. Skating is always a good sign as far as that
goes.
You've got a guy that's available to come back, and people were like, oh my, they put him on IR yesterday. Well, they backdated it to, you know, to the 9th. So you got your week out of the way already, so he is eligible to come back tomorrow night. However, no practice today. I don't know if that's a good sign or not, whether he will be back in the lineup tomorrow. But
no reason to rush Arvidsson back.
Not really.
With Arizona, Florida, Tampa Bay, New Jersey, all on the horizon. Tampa Bay, a great team, but
yep,
none of the four are division games. None of the four are important games in the conference.
Well, you figure, I mean, the only division game that the Predators have for the rest of the month is Chicago right after the All-Star break.
Yep.
So, I mean, and given that there's a good chance that Corey Crawford is now done for the season, that kind of makes the trade deadline a little bit more interesting to see, you know, all of a sudden the market for goaltending went up and, you know, Stan Bowman's shown that he may overpay a little bit, Jean Merson, for things. So it could be interesting to see what happens there because Chicago is in trouble
given what happened last postseason with the Preds sweeping them in round one. There's got to be a lot of pressure on Stan Bowman, especially, you know, the Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad trade seemed like a panic move.
Yep, exactly the word. And then the Hjalmarsson to Arizona. I mean, look, there were salary dumps that needed to happen, but were those the two players you really wanted to dump?
Good point. When's the last time we saw Chicago in last place in the Central Division in January? There's got to be a lot of pressure on both Stan Bowman, the GM for the Blackhawks,
and Joel Quenneville,
the head coach.
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting finish to see what happens because for the first time in probably, 9 years, you're going to the trade deadline going, is Chicago a buyer or are they a seller? It's the first time you're asking that question.
Intriguing question right there. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside
You've been asking a question.
Paul
You've
McCann.
Been teasing a question.
Yes. Thank you, Paul.
You've got to get that out.
Thanks, Paul.
I've heard that before.
Maybe. A time or two.
What's
so, why UC Saros' improvement could be the best thing to happen to the Preds this season? I bring up this point because we were talking about UC Saros at length in the first segment of the show. UC Saros, last 9 games, 5-0-3 with a .956 save percentage.
Mm-hmm.
He has been absolutely lights out when called upon in this last month and a half. And when you look at Pecorine, he's on pace for the same amount of starts that he had last year, 61. And looking at a busy February coming up and a busy March as the Preds have to catch up in the standings at some point as they have 4 games in hand on the St. Louis
Almost everybody.
Blues. And UC Saros, the fact that Peter Laviolette has the confidence to go to Saros in a game like last night against the best team standings-wise in the Western Conference, the fact that he can go to him in that situation and Saros can pitch a 43-save shutout and you can give Pekka a couple more days of rest, a couple more days of knocking off the rust before, you know, as we would expect him to face Arizona tomorrow night. If you can keep getting these kinds of performances from Saros, maybe not a shutout every night. He has 3 shutouts in the last 5 games.
Yeah.
But
we'll take it.
Moving forward in the second half, you're going to want you have to give Pecorine some rest.
Absolutely.
And UC Saros playing like he is could be the best thing to happen for the Preds this season because the second half is all about chasing that Central Division, chasing home ice in the playoffs.
And
because it's so important to them, and him playing this way is huge for Pekka and the rest of the team.
There's not, it's and here's the other thing, I've been saying this all season. the back pressure, the pressure on the team that's playing. It's been fascinating when Terrace came in. All of a sudden, there's a wealth of centers. So we better, if you're going to be the 3C or the 4C, you're going to be the best out of another four players.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the same thing going on right now, and we noticed it last year. We notice it this year. During the regular season, when Saros is on, it also pushes Pekka.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with a little bit of competition right behind you to help keep you sharp and on your game. You saw the same thing there. And if you look at the schedule coming up now in February, I bet you see Saros at least once a week. You've got back-to-back Toronto, Ottawa. You're going to see that. I think you'll see him get one of the St. Louis, Calgary, Detroit game, one of those three the following week. Then you got another back-to-back Ottawa, Detroit. You're going to see him there. I think you'll probably yes, you will see him that following week because there's a back-to-back Edmonton and Vancouver starting September.
So that's a great point. But from the All-Star break through that road trip that you're referencing when
yep.
they go to Edmonton, Vancouver, and Colorado, there's a lot of big games in that stretch
yep.
and a lot of Eastern Conference games in that stretch where you can't afford to put UC Saros in there and, you know, save Pekka for the big games against the Blues, against the Kings, against the Blackhawks and teams like that.
Absolutely. No, I think it's set up nicely now, and with the confidence that they have in UC Saros, you're right. His success is absolutely what I believe the best thing for the Predators right now. For not only the back pressure on Pekka, but it's that Laviolette can be confident to put him in any game going forward.
And you're right about the friendly competition. We saw that last year. I would not be surprised to see Pekka go in there tomorrow night against the Arizona Coyotes and pitch a shutout himself.
You know, the fascinating part, and here's the thing, you got to look at Pekka on this. I don't know if you saw right when they were right after the game, the celebration, and then everybody headed to the locker. Well, Pekka came over to the penalty box and started skating around. He wanted the game puck for UC.
For UC. Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, and I'm sitting here, and he comes in, he goes, where are the pucks? I need a puck. And I'm like, go get them. They're over there. So he goes skating after one of the off-ice officials to get a game puck
uh-huh.
for UC for that shutout. So you look at that, you know, great teaming, you know, great support. I mean, Pekka knows he's not going to be here forever. He knows that. And I think he'd be absolutely fine when it's time for UC to take over the reins in Nashville.
And UC Saros last night became the first Preds goalie in team history to record a pair of 40-plus save shutouts. Isn't that crazy?
Why do I get the feeling that's probably not going to be a record that stands for a long time?
I know, right? I mean, think about all the goaltenders that have come through here. Thomas Vokoun, Chris Mason, Pekka
yeah.
Rinne. I mean, Dan Ellis has one of those 40-plus save shutouts.
Right.
I mean, it's really impressive what UC Saros has done over the last month and a half.
Absolutely. Again, I think he's certainly earned back the trust of Smashville. I mean, it was shook a little bit. And you said it yourself.
I brought it up in the first segment.
Yep.
I was one of the people early on in the season doubting whether he was truly the future. And I still want to see more, but, I mean, he has absolutely proved myself and any other doubters out there wrong over these last nine games.
Well, and it's interesting because, again, we've talked about this on Slapshot Radio with Chris Mason a couple of times, that, you know, making that transition is always difficult from the backup to the starter. You know, Chris talked about his struggles in doing that, here in Nashville and in St. Louis. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch, you know, the maturation of this young goaltender, and you just think the sky's the limit for this guy.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, this hour absolutely flew by.
No kidding.
And
no kidding.
We will be able to hear you next
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. Yep.
Got Greg Wojcinski going to be joining us, the artist formerly known as Puck Daddy. And we've got a few other surprises. We're talking to a couple of folks. We want to talk to some folks from Florida to help preview the Florida game that night.
Awesome. And they play Tampa Bay
on Tuesday.
Right after that. So.
Yeah.
Perfect timing for that. For Paul McCann, I'm Ryan Porth. The next edition of Preds Insiders is next Monday at 6 o'clock. Coming up next right here, Smashville Live from Tin Roof on Broadway. Braden Gall, Hal Gill, Cody McLeod, Kyle Turris. Keep it locked right here on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game.